The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
All right, the motion of the defendant is granted. Charges against the defendant on all counts are dismissed with prejudice, and he is released from the obligation of his bond. Anything else? Thank you. Good day.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
All right. That was the judge in the Kyle Rittenhouse case. And if you have not heard yet, he was found not guilty on all charges. And so far, peace in Kenosha. I was just watching the defense attorney take questions from the media. We'll talk much more about that coming up in a little bit. I'd love your take on it, too. I'd like to know what you think. Was justice served? Was it a victory for self-defense, for gun rights? Was it a miscarriage of justice? And how do you think the media played out, played a role in all of this? I have my own theory on them. But, of course, you can dial in anytime, 888-914-9149. Before we get into that, some big news going on in addition to Kyle. Boy, because this will affect you directly. Build Back Better, right? The Build Back Better bill today. The House passed earlier today that bill, and it's going to cost $1.75 trillion, according to the CBO. That's the Congressional Budget Office. It's going to add about $367 billion to the deficit. Now, I'll just stop for a second because I don't know if you're like me, if you feel the same way. I mean, I throw out the word trillion now like it's not a big deal. When I look at billion, I think, it's only $367 billion. That's not much over 10 years. Billions used to be a lot of money, right? We were talking millions and then billions. Hundreds of millions was a lot of money. And we're talking, almost $2 trillion more dollars and adding $367 billion to the deficit. The passage came, I don't know, I woke up early this morning, turned on the television set, and I was checking different news channels and saw that House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy had given a record speech. It was a marathon 8-hour speech in order to delay the vote. And, of course, if you missed it, here's kind of an overview of what went down when McCarthy surprised his fellow lawmakers. I thought he probably let him in on this, but he didn't stop. It was almost 9 hours. I imagine just sitting there thinking, this guy's going to stop any minute, and then we can vote. This guy's going to stop any minute, and then we're going to vote. 9 hours long just to delay that vote on President Biden's Build Back Better plan. And by doing that, sending a message of his own. Here's an overview from the Today Show.
Overnight, Republicans throwing an unexpected curveball, disrupting President Biden's plans to pass one of his largest pieces of legislation. Republican House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy rising to speak Thursday evening and going and going and going, lasting well into the morning, aiming to stall plans to vote on the sweeping bill, which would direct over $1 trillion to social change programs and climate measures. The tensions on the House floor palpable.
It's all right. I got all night.
McCarthy railing against the Build Back Better Act.
Never in American history has so much been spent at one time.
Yeah, it's so true. Historic on so many levels. And I, we just need to pray all the more for our country. That's all I can say. I mean, sometimes things seem so much bigger than you, so much bigger than me, and you think, my gosh, what's the future hold? But we can't give in. We can't despair. I always stand on the scripture that God brings good out of everything, So let's pray that good will come from this, and we'll see what happens. Pfizer and Moderna have received approval from the Food and Drug Administration for adult Americans to get booster shots against COVID-19. A lot of states have already been encouraging people to get them. In fact, the governor of New Mexico indicated that she believes that, people are really not fully vaccinated until they receive, their booster shot. So, I don't know, you might have your two shots and say, look, I took one for the team. I got my two. I'm vaccinated. I'm healthy. I'm in a good demographic. I don't have a comorbidity. I'm not going to get a booster. No, I wonder how things are going to change. I wonder how mindsets are going to change. Yeah, just as a side note here, I don't intend to talk a lot about this, but I saw Joe Rogan a little bit earlier, He's a podcaster, and he was just talking about, you know, how in China we have these social credit scores, you know, and in China they track everything from how you drive, whether you get tickets, you know, do you buy diapers when you shop, or do you buy, you know, alcohol? You know, it's like they want to know everything. What's your credit score like? And all that affects your social status. It determines whether or not, you know, you can even travel. I mean, China's oppressive in that way. Some are worried that these vaccine passports, if you will, saying, hey, you can't take a Disney cruise. Now, kids can't go on those Disney cruises unless they're vaccinated. I think I saw a report earlier today, you got to be 5 and up. And they went on certain cruise lines to have their vaccinations. That's like it's like a vaccine passport. And there's some people say, like, I don't want my kid to have it. I'm concerned about fertility. I'm concerned about this. I'm concerned about that. And others say, hey, wait, hold on. I want my kids safe. I don't want to go on a cruise with a bunch of people and end up getting COVID. And I understand both sides of the equation, but you got cruises. Now you've got restaurants. You've got schools. Will you see airlines? You know, what's going to happen? And, you know, eventually it's a way to kind of control people and lead to other things. But, you know, you've got national and safety as one concern, and then you've got, you know, freedom and the ability to decide what you want to put in your body or what you want to do with your child's health because you've got jurisdiction over your child. This is not an issue that'll go away. We're going to see a lot more of it play out in the days ahead and continue to look at it and try to be as clear thinking as we possibly can. You know, I heard Bill Maher recently. I'm going to play a little bit of audio for you. I mean, I'm looking at what's happening in the world, whether it is the incredible division we're seeing on Capitol Hill with, you know, the expansion of government and Build Back Better and socialistic type of programs. We saw what happened in Virginia. We saw what happened in New Jersey, right? Parents saying, hey, enough is enough. You're not going to indoctrinate my kids. You're not going to be showing them porn. You're not going to be teaching them about all this gender fluidity and critical race theory. And, you know, parents just had enough. The school board, you know, you're not the high authority. You're not God. I've been given that responsibility to shepherd my child to make sure that they're educated properly. And we saw what happened, right? We saw what happened in the state of Virginia, you know, with a Republican governor take over. And right now they're looking at electoral maps and they're saying, what's going to happen a year from now when we have midterm elections? They expect a huge red wave. People are disenchanted. The president, his approval rating, and we talked about it earlier in the week, the beginning of the week, you know, his was like 40-some percent, right? He was in the 40s, and Kamala Harris was, what, about 28%, well below him. Now, his approval rating, I saw a report this morning, 36%. Only 36% of the nation, that includes Democrats and you know, progressives and others, approve what he's doing. 74% say, hey, we are not happy. And it's not about the man personally. I was saying this earlier to my wife. I said, you know, it has nothing to do with Joe Biden or his age. Maybe it does for some people. This really is a reflection of people not liking the policy. They just don't like the policy that the president is putting forth. They don't like the expansion of government. They don't like the indoctrination of their children, right? They don't like us, you know, leaving American citizens behind in Afghanistan. They don't like us not telling China, hey, enough is enough, right? And then we can go through the whole litany of things that are now happening. I think it's reflective. I do think unless Democrats realize what's happening here, they're gonna lose in a massive way in a year from now. And you even have progressives, liberals, like Bill Maher. Bill Maher, of all people, and I've been talking about him recently because the stuff he's been saying, I'm thinking, I can't believe I agree with him. He's right. Bill, you're right. You know, if you're not familiar with him, he's a liberal comedian. And he's been railing in recent months against critical race theory. He thinks it's racist. Bill, you're right. He's been railing against wokeism and the fact that Democrats are in a far-reaching, you know, way, just going too far. You know, the Democrats in a far-reaching interview with Chris Cuomo Wednesday night condemned the controversial education movement, just virtue signaling, and accused liberals of of being afraid to acknowledge progress. Listen to what Bill had to say here. I think you'll appreciate it.
I think they're going to get thumped in the election. I mean, that usually happens in midterm elections. But, you know, I mean, Joe, look, I'm glad he's there. But he has not exactly stuck the landing on a lot of the issues that he was dealing with. I keep saying this to the Democratic Party. The reason why you are so toxic is because you have become the party of no common sense. My politics have not changed. I'm an old school liberal. When we're talking about the race issue, they changed, not me. I was the old, should be moving toward a colorblind society where we don't see race. That's the old way to look at it. I think that's still the good way to look at it. That's how we win. When it doesn't matter what your race is, the quality of your character, not the color of your skin, that's not wokeism. Wokeism, we have to see it everywhere, all the time.
Yeah, I could not agree with him more. Of course, he was quoting Martin Luther King Jr. there, you know, that we should judge others not on the color of the skin, but on the content of their character. And we should be a colorblind society. I personally don't buy the mantra that we are a racist nation. I think, look, the horrors of America's early chapters should be taught. I think slavery is our original sin. I think it's terrible. I think abortion is our new sin. And I think we'll look back, we'll get that issue right one day, too. But we're not a racist country. I mean, look how overwhelmingly this nation put into office an African-American president, Barack Obama, and did it again. I mean, I don't buy this mantra that we are racist. You know who I think is behind a lot of it? I think it is the media. I really do. I think that they fomented this idea that we are racist. I think that, you know, in some respects, some of those in the Democrat Party, and again, I don't want to be political here. This is not, I'm not championing the Republican Party by any means. But you can clearly see what has been promoted. Even the whole Kenosha thing with Kyle Rittenhouse. The media played a huge role in what happened that night, and so did liberal government. Governor Evers, who was the governor of the state of Wisconsin, he didn't do enough. You know, how bad would it have looked if he took help from the president of the United States during an election year, right? If the President Trump came in and gave some aid to keep civility, to keep people's businesses from burning, to keep people safe, we wouldn't even be talking about Kyle Rittenhouse today if he would have said yes. People want law and order. They want peace. They want to live in a society that is colorblind, right? I totally believe that. And yet the narrative being pushed today, especially by this mainstream media, liberal media, and by certain people in government, is that we're a racist nation. You know, that there's all this injustice, you know, that we need big government. Government is going to be your nanny. It's going to take care of you. It's going to put money in your pocket. You need to rely on the government. You need to believe what the government tells you. You need to let the government educate and teach your children. You know, the Democrats got drubbed. They got pounded and beat in the polls earlier in the month. And despite the fact that President Biden and Vice President Harris' polls numbers continue to sink, they are persisting in pushing critical race theory. There was one Democratic strategist. He says, look, it's not just Republicans that want a bigger role for parents in education. It's just that Republicans are willing to, you know, it's not my words. This is what this Democrat strategist says. It's just that Republicans are willing to let white supremacists write curricula. How many times have we heard the white supremacy thrown out? You know, I'm just getting tired of it. I'm venting a little bit today because I'm just sick of this type of language. It's not true. It's not true. You know, and you've got guys like Bill Maher, who you just heard saying, hey, the Democrats are going to crazy town. Let's get back to normalcy. The president ran as a unifier, as somebody who would lead all Americans. And we're not seeing that right now. And the accusation, of course, is, you know, that he laid out there is not going to go unanswered, this Democratic strategist, because I do think, you know, and people, I do think in the elections, the midterm elections, there's going to be a price to pay. So we'll see. I'm just throwing it out. I'm just throwing it out to you right now. We'll see. I was watching media coverage too, because I try to be at least fair in my own observation of media. All right. And I turned on three networks right after the Kyle Rittenhouse verdict was ultimately reached. And first network I put on was MSNBC, because they were banned from being in the courthouse I think yesterday or the day before. And I would see how they were going to cover the coverage. And of course, they had people on the street, and the commentator who was on was talking about how this is terrible and how they interviewed the, you know, all the people who lost, the parents of the people who lost their lives, of course, are going to be outraged. They were there on the front steps, and then they went ahead, and the one commentator, and I think it's wrong to say this. This is going to have other people, when there's, you know, any sort of problem in a town, take their weapons down and feel that they can shoot who they want. You know, making these types of comments, broad, sweeping, really unfair comments. If you watch the trial, and MSNBC only gave you the prosecution, they never gave you the full view, and I think that's part of the problem. You know, these jurors spent days going over the evidence and found that Rittenhouse tried to flee many times. You know, he had guns pointed at him, was being beaten. They did their due justice. And I think we got to give our judicial system the benefit of the doubt. A person is innocent until they're proven guilty in this country. At least I hope I will be if I ever have to go to court, right? And I hope a jury of my peers will look at the evidence objectively and come away with it simply seeking the truth. My personal opinion is, in this case, I think they did that. I really do. But then I switched the channel and I went to Fox, you know, maybe the other end of the spectrum. And then, Fox, my personal opinion is I felt the coverage was pretty fair and balanced. They brought in some legal experts to look at the verdict. They went to the ground for a report there. You know, they listened to the judge. They played you the reaction of Kyle when he heard the news, kind of collapsing and breaking down in tears. And then I flipped to CNN. And to my surprise, CNN actually, you know, at least the short window I saw, I only watched maybe 15 or 20 minutes of each of these networks, it was pretty fair. I mean, it was made it tilt a little bit left, but the coverage they had on there, they had a defense attorney, they had others. I thought the coverage was pretty fair there. But if you go back and you remember when George Floyd died, when New York was being looted, when Seattle, when Minnesota was burning, when you looked at all these different places, MSNBC and CNN in particular, I think threw fuel, accelerant, on the fire by their coverage and the things that they've said. And I just pray that tonight there's peace in the city of Kenosha. I really do. I hope people will respect the rule of law in this nation. I hope they will respect this. Just because a verdict doesn't go your way, you know, you don't always win, you're not always happy, doesn't mean it's a miscarriage of justice. You know, all five counts, all five, not one, not two, not three, not four, not five, not some other variation of it. All five counts against Kyle Rittenhouse were dropped against him. The charges were intentional homicide, attempted intentional homicide, reckless homicide, and two charges of recklessly endangering safety. And the jury rejected every single solitary one of those. Every single one of them. And I watched the footage as the news broke. I got this text alert, turned on the television. I saw Rittenhouse collapsing into his chair just from relief. He was a 17-year-old kid when this happened. He's 18 right now, could have spent his life in jail. And when he heard not guilty on all charges, today he's a free man. Outside the courthouse, of course, there was a crowd gathering, and a lot of law enforcement officers were there trying to keep the calm. I think they were actually going out and giving coffee and donuts to the crowd, but there was tension in the crowd. So what always creeps me out is what happens at night when the sun sets. You know, it's like those nocturnal rats come out. You know, it's like the violence erupts in the shadows and in the darkness. I mean, if you're going to protest, do it in the daylight. Do it now. If you're not happy with it, let your voice be heard. Do it peacefully. Do it civilly, right? But I'm hoping that there's enough National Guard, and I hope enough people have learned from what has happened in the past that we don't see that type of conduct again. 500 members of the National Guard are on standby. But the mainstream media, they're already trying to make this into something more than it should be. They're giving lip service to the fact that the process worked and that the jury found him not guilty, but they're also wondering out loud, you know, whether or not this sets an example for other young men to show up and riot with guns and to keep the peace. Of course, I think they're totally missing the fact that there should be riots happening at all. You know, this is the United States of America. Civil protests, yeah, sure. Riots, no. I believe in law and I believe in order. Of course, Fox News reported that the jury left the courthouse in silence, masks over their face and their hoodies over their heads. And obviously, they don't want to talk to the media, and they're just trying to protect their identities, though I'm sure they're going to be found out. All right. Let me hear from you, too. I only have a minute or two to take a few calls, so I'll be more than glad to grab one or two. And let me go to Kevin in Cape Coral, Florida. Kevin, good afternoon.
Sure. My friend, you can't say that you're not Republican, you don't take the Republican views. Because, my friend, you take it every time. There's a lot, I agree with you. But you take the Republican side and go against the Democrats all the time. When you have people on for views, you always take your side of the story, and you never bring any guests on that would be an opposing side of the story. And this kid that was found innocent, I don't know. I mean, you go to a place with an AK-47, and you're not looking for trouble, and you're saying it was self-defense? And I'm
Kevin,
not
did
saying
you watch
rioters
it?
Rioters were right. They were hunked it wrong.
Kevin,
yes,
did you watch any of the trial?
The trial. I didn't. I seen parts of it. I didn't see as much as I probably should.
I'll agree with you on this point, Kevin. I'm not a fan of anybody carrying an AR-15 around. I don't like the idea of it. And I know this kid, young, 17, probably had ideals. He thought he'd come in there, maybe a wannabe cop, trying to help people, maybe safeguard people from having the businesses burn. They showed evidence that there were opportunities for him to shoot other people when he was being attacked, and he never did. I'm going to trust in the jury and our judicial system. I'm going to believe that they looked at the evidence. It took them days of deliberation. They went back. They looked at evidence again. And I'm going to trust in the process. You know, I'm not going to trust in MSNBC or CNN or Fox or any other outlet. You know, it all gets reported. Everybody has a little bit of a slant on it. But you've got to admit, Kevin, that there are certain outlets that are they show a much greater bias than others.
Sure they do. You're absolutely right. WSNBC does, but so does Fox. And show. I mean, come on. Have you ever watched Sean Hannity and Tucker Carlson? There's just as bias. They say cruel things about the press, just like they did about you know people said about Trump. But we have.
Hey, Kyle, your phone's Kevin, your phone's breaking up. To your point about Hannity and Carlson, I will agree with you on this point. I know a lot of people like what they have to say, but I am not a fan of personal attacks. I don't like that hominid attacks. I don't like the monikers that are often given. I think respect and respectful dialogue is what is important. And I do. I understand where you're coming from, brother. I do. I see what you're saying. I try never to wave a conservative or liberal flag. I just try to look at life through the eyes of my Catholicism. I'm a Catholic. I try to stand on a moral foundation. Issues that are important to me, as you know, are often the issue of life, right? That's the top of the pyramid for me. And down from there, all these other things. And why is life so important? Because from that comes respect for the dignity of the human person, and that'll ripple out into all sorts of things, from education to welfare, even to the environment. So, but look, I got to take a quick break here. I'm glad you called, Kevin. I'm glad you're listening. I'd love to talk with you again. I got to take a short pause. I'll be back with more. Stay with me. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
Fourscore and 7 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Now we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation, or any nation so conceived and so dedicated, can long endure. We are met on a great battlefield of that war. We have come to dedicate a portion of that field as a final resting place for those who here gave their lives that that nation might live. It is altogether fitting and proper that we should do this.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Of course, that was a rendition of President Abraham Lincoln's Gettysburg Address. 158 years ago today, you might remember the president made a train ride from Washington, D.C. to the town of Gettysburg in Pennsylvania. It was, of course, the site of a bloody battle, a decisive battle between the North and the South, and it marked a turning point for the war, of course, in the North's favor. And he went there to dedicate the cemetery for the war dead. And on the way, Lincoln composed perhaps what is one of the most famous speeches ever given. Came at a mere 272 words. That was it. And it probably only took a few moments to read. But it has gone down in history as a speech that, you know, not only should be memorized by the general public. I know many people often do that in their speech classes, have to give these presentations. But one, yeah, we should remember the speech as one that also helped to really alter the course of the Civil War. It's probably one that I think we still need to hear today. And I've really fallen in love with an author's book called Old Abe. And I think you'll love this too. John Cribb is the author of that book. He's a Lincoln expert. And he's been with me many times. I've invited him back today as we take a look at the times in which we live. Is there a parallel to what Lincoln faced? And let's take a look at that famous speech. Of course, Thanksgiving's right around the corner, too. And, you know, we have, of course, Abraham Lincoln and his Thanksgiving address and so much more. John, it's good to have you back. Good afternoon.
Thanks so much for having me back. I appreciate it. And I love that lead-in, that reading of the speech. That was beautiful.
Yes, one of the better ones that are out there. My producer, Maggie, was looking around. She says, I found one that's great. It's like 2 minutes. Can we run a thing? I'm like, well, maybe we should only run a few. a little snapshot of it. That was done by Jeff Daniels. So, Maggie, open your mic. Where did you find that? That's Jeff Daniels? Because you love that.
Oh, yeah. I ended up finding it on YouTube. But, yeah, I thought it was an interesting rendition of the Gettysburg Address. Jeff Daniels.
I'm going to go find it. Yeah, that's really good. That's wonderful. Yeah. Great.
We'll send you a link to it. Hey, let's talk about this historic moment, if we could, John, just for a moment. Of course, 158 years now.
Yes.
The speech. There's something about speech writing. I think less said sometimes is best said, too. I sometimes am asked to give talks or make presentations, and quite often people say, oh, you know, we'd like you to speak for 45 minutes, or can you fill this hour? And, you know, I talk for a living. Yeah, I can talk for an hour, but after 20 minutes, people's eyes glaze over, right? And nobody wants to hear me anymore. Yeah. So
especially
my new policy is now.
If you're standing between them and dinner, you know, they want you to be done.
True story. I was asked to speak at a men's conference years ago, right? And they say, Drew, you're all passionate. We want you to, you know, we want you to come up here and just get the crowd all fired up and send them out, right? So there's a bunch of guys at this men's conference. They were there for probably 7 o'clock in the morning, right? They were sitting in wood bleachers in some gym somewhere, or some auditorium. And they had just finished lunch at 12:31. They sat down. I came out to speak at 3. And they heard the same talk from every guy practically, day after, some incarnation of it. Their eyes were glazed over. They were shifting. And my talk was way too long. I thought that was a lesson. Never again. And, you know, from that moment forward, I always try to, be aware of that. Sometimes I fall into the trap of speaking too much, but that's, you know, Lincoln understood that. 272 words. It's powerful. Goes down now as one of the great speeches in American history. Tell me a little bit about it and its background.
Well, he went to Gettysburg because he was asked to come go up there and help dedicate this new cemetery that was being built to hold the thousands of soldiers that had been killed at that awful battle, you know, in July. Previous July, July 1st to 3rd, 1863, and there were 50,000 casualties, I think 10,000 dead on both sides. And after the battle, the men who had been killed were just, they just buried them right on the field and very hastily dug shallow temporary graves, and they would often put a board on it with maybe the name of the soldier in pencil. And but now the cemetery was being built at Gettysburg to hold the remains of about 3,500 Union soldiers as a permanent memorial. And so, you know, back then presidents didn't run around the country giving speeches all the time like they do today. Lincoln certainly did not. But he made an exception with Gettysburg. Number one, he wanted to go to honor those fallen heroes. But also he knew that the war was entering a new phase. The Army of the Potomac, which was the main army of Northern Army in the East, had managed to turn back Lee's invasion of the North at Gettysburg. But there was still an awful lot of hard fighting ahead, and Lincoln knew that. He knew that, and he wanted to speak to the nation about the war, and he chose this occasion to do it with his famous address.
Yeah. Well, powerful, to say the least, as you just heard a part of it there. You know, Lincoln lived in a time of great racial divide, as we know. The Civil War was raging. He signed the Emancipation Proclamation. You know, today we live at a time where critical race theory is being pushed, and this racist mantra is trying to be advanced. I don't know where you stand on it, John. My personal opinion, I was saying it before you came on a little bit earlier in the broadcast, I don't believe America is a fundamentally racist country. I think we have a very ugly and dark chapter in America's history. I think the original sin is slavery. Today, I think abortion is its new sin. But clearly, you know, we see the advancements that we made. I heard Governor Tim Scott recently talk, and he talked about how his state of, I believe it's North Carolina. Was it South Carolina? Maggie, where's
he's
he from?
North Carolina.
South Carolina, right?
My state, yeah, South Carolina. Yeah.
So, first of all, I love that guy. I hope he runs for president. He talked about how South, and Maggie, if you can find the audio that we have, I'd love to play for John. I didn't expect to talk to him about it, but what he had to say was just so great about how, you know, the South Carolina of his past is not the South Carolina of today. And I believe that. And yet there are factions in our culture that are really pushing this critical race theory, which to me is racist in some respects, and creating this belief in a lot of Americans that we are still as divided as we were back in 1865. Give me your take on where we are, and are there parallels between, you know, what Lincoln faced? I'm sure they were greater than today, but you know, we see America divided today as we did, you know, back in 1860s.
Yes, absolutely. No, I'm with you on the exact same page as you with critical race theory, or, you know, whatever people want to call it, and it goes under different names. And, you know, you hear people say, oh, well, it's not taught in schools. Well, maybe technically a course called critical race theory may not be taught in schools, but a lot of this, you know, anti-racism, you know, sometimes it's called abolitionist teaching. It goes under different names, and it basically just looks at the world through the lens of race. And I think Lincoln would be pretty horrified at it. But because, with, you know, one thing he was doing with that speech at Gettysburg was trying to help reset the nation. And, you know, he starts off talking, that opening line says 47 years ago. And, you know, 47 is a fancy way of saying 87. If you subtract 87 from 1863, which is when he was given that speech, that takes you straight back to 1776 and the Declaration of Independence, which was his favorite founding document. That was his touchstone. Wow. And then he proceeds to say, our nation, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation conceived in liberty, dedicated to the proposition of all men are created equal. That's straight out of the Declaration of Independence. But Lincoln, what he was in effect doing with that speech was challenging the nation to refocus on its founding principles, which many people over the years had lost sight of. And the speech was basically reminding Americans that this country is magnificent as it was, and the founding of this country was a miracle in world history. Yeah. But it was born with that tragic flaw of slavery. But the language of the Declaration promised freedom and equality to all. And Lincoln was basically saying with that speech, going forward, we're going to be a country dedicated to redeeming, to fulfilling the promise of the Declaration for all people, all Americans, starting with freeing some 4 million, you know, enslaved people. Lincoln called it a new birth of freedom in his speech. And, you know, it took a long time to consummate that. Even after the Emancipation Proclamation and the 13th Amendment, we had 100 years of the KKK and Jim Crow. And we all know that. And believe me, kids learn that in school. They definitely learn that. That's not hidden in any way. But nevertheless, this nation, as well as better than any nation on earth, it's been fits and starts, and sometimes it's been slower than we want. It has always moved toward, ever since Lincoln, you know, trying to fulfill the promise of the Declaration. And Lincoln is really the one that set the country on the road to becoming a truly great nation. And he did it in no small part with that speech 158 years ago.
Yeah. What was the reaction to it? I'm curious. You know, it was short. It was a bloody time in American yeah. history. How was it perceived yeah. by Americans of the day?
Well, it's interesting. The initial reaction was mixed. It will not surprise you to know that the press was not exactly unbiased in Lincoln's day. And newspapers were very closely aligned with either Democrat or Republican parties. And as a matter of fact, the editor of the New York Times is actually the chairman of a Republican National Committee. If you can believe that. That's quite a change for today, isn't it? But
yeah, no kidding.
So the anti-Lincoln Democrat papers either ignored the speech or they panned it. For example, the Chicago Times wrote that the cheek of every American should tingle with shame at the flat, silly, dishwatery utterances of Lincoln at Gettysburg. Republican papers, on the other hand, praised it. The Springfield Republican in Massachusetts, for example, called it a perfect gem of a speech. So it depended on what paper you were reading. Having said that, it really did not take long for, as it was reprinted in papers around the country, for Americans to realize this really is a profound, magnificent speech. And by the way, one reason it was so short was that he was basically asked to keep it short. The invitation said, just to make a few appropriate remarks, there was a main speaker named Edward Everett. He spoke for, as you may know, about 2 hours. And then Lincoln's job was just to give a dedication statement. But there was another reason he wanted to keep it short. And that was that he knew that if he kept it very short, that newspapers would reprint the entire speech. They could fit it in one column. And that's exactly what happened. Newspapers around the country reprinted this thing. Lincoln was a master at using the media, using newspapers to get his to speak to the American people. And that's another reason that speech was just 272 words, you know, 10 sentences long.
I didn't know that. That's actually fascinating. That really is.
Yeah.
You know, I find it revealing too. There's a parallel between the media and the bias it has sometimes lining up political parties. You know, at least the newspapers of 1865 and what we see with our mainstream media today. Not a whole lot has sometimes changed, unfortunately. And there are some good outlets out there. I don't like to broad brush the media in general, but we can certainly see that. And the media plays such a big role in creating this division and advancing certain narrative, doesn't it?
Oh, do they ever? And boy, we really saw that the last, you know, several with this trial in Kenosha. I mean, not to get too far off topic, but that judge, I think, was absolutely right to, you know, to chastise the media for just doing a horrible job and just misrepresenting what had happened. But anyway, I think, you know, to go back to your question you asked about, I think, you know, Lincoln would be horrified to see much of this division that he, the man gave his life to try for union, to try to bring this country together. And I think he would be heartbroken. I think he would be, on the one hand, I think he would be amazed and thrilled and elated to see the great progress that has been made in this country for equality and rights for all and opportunities for all, because it is obviously so much better than it was in his day. Boy. On the other hand, I think he would be discouraged over much of this division, and I think he would be discouraged over some of the threats, these new threats to freedom that we're dealing with today, which are not as you said a minute ago, they're not as violent as they were in his day. But the, you know, liberty can slip away little by little when people are not paying attention and not doing enough to defend it just as easily as they can with an attack, a violent attack. You know, Madison, another great American, Madison had a great line. He said, there are more instances of the abridgment of the freedom of the people by gradual and silent encroachments of those in power than by violent and sudden usurpations. So we're just as likely or more likely to lose our liberty, just as slipping away little by little. And I think Lincoln,
I agree.
This speech speaks, to our times. I mean, you know, liberty erodes when big tech companies decide what sort of opinions can and can't be stated in the public square. And it erodes when college professors teach students it's okay and even virtuous to shout down opinions they don't like, or run speakers off a campus if they don't agree with what they're saying. And liberty erodes when cancel culture warriors, you know, destroy people's careers because they don't like something they've said. That's Gettysburg speech speaks to defending liberty against those kinds of threats, too.
Amen to that. Well, John, stay with me. I'm going to take a short pause. If you want to join us, I only have a few minutes with my guest today, author John Cribb. He's the author of Old Abe. You can check it out. His website's johncribbauthor.com. We'll be back. I think I'll play a little bit of Senator Tim Scott's statement, too. I think it's really reflective of where we are as a nation. I'll take your calls if you're on hold or if you want to join us. The number here, it's 888-914-9149. Taking a look at the Gettysburg Address today on the anniversary of that historic speech. Hi, Drew Mariani here. Hey, I am traveling to the Holy Land in February with our underwriting sponsor, Nativity Pilgrimage. Information is available at relevantradio.com/Holy Land. That's relevantradio.com/Holy Land.
America! America, you know, God done shed his grace on thee. He crowned thy good, saved brotherhood.
Yeah, well, it's so good. I could let that whole thing play. That's, of course, the incredible voice of Ray Charles. Good afternoon. I'm Drew Mariani, joined today by John Cribb, a very gifted author. If you are fascinated by American history, you want to learn a little bit more about it, you want a great read, John wrote a novel called Old Abe. You can find it at all major bookstores. Of course, his website is johncribbauthor.com. The last name, too, people always say, how do you spell it? C-R-I-B-B. All right. Get
right,
you plugged
two B's,
into that.
Correct.
Yeah, two B's. And then B squared, right? C-R-I-B-B.
Yeah.
Today, of course, the 158th anniversary of the Gettysburg Address. Look, John, we also have coming up in just a couple days. I should really bring you back to talk about it in greater detail on Tuesday. Lincoln and Thanksgiving. As well, Abraham Lincoln's first Thanksgiving Day proclamation, if I'm correct, was what, 1863? And up until that time, Thanksgiving wasn't even an established American holiday. There were these sporadic celebrations held whenever people thought about it, but nothing official. And there was a woman named Sarah Josepha Hale, the author of that nursery rhyme, Mary Had a Little Lamb, that wanted a national Thanksgiving Day. Fill us in. Exactly. Give me the history of... Well, Lincoln's fingerprints, if you will, on Thanksgiving as we know it today.
Yeah, so you're exactly right. It was just kind of a sporadic holiday. Some states observed it, some not. Some localities observed it, and it was, you know, some in September, some November, some December. And Lincoln really was the one that establishes it as a true national holiday. And in 1863, he issued this proclamation setting aside the last Thursday in November as an official Thanksgiving Day for the whole nation. I think it said, as a day of thanksgiving and praise to our beneficent Father who dwelleth in the heavens, I think was the language it used. And when you read it, it really is a magnificent proclamation. And by the way, what they call proclamations, we would call executive orders today. But he says, you know, he basically says in it, despite this horrible war, this nation does have much to be thankful for. Now, I must tell you that that proclamation, it is beautiful, but Lincoln did not write it. His Secretary of State, William Henry Seward, actually penned it and brought it in for him to sign. But and then he had been lobbied by Sarah Josepha Hale, who, as you say, she was a well-known writer and editor of the Boston Ladies Magazine and Godey's Lady Book, which was, I guess, probably the most popular magazine of the day, or one of them. And as you say, she was the author of Mary Had a Little Lamb. But she started lobbying for, she thought it would be good for the unity of the nation to have a national Thanksgiving holiday. And she started way back in like the 1820s writing presidents saying, you know, we need to do this. And so she writes Lincoln and Secretary of State Seward too, and they decide to go ahead and make it a national Thanksgiving Day. And so, you know, that's, that's kind of where the origins of the holiday as a national holiday for all Americans.
I love it. My guest, of course, Lincoln expert. If you've got a question, you want to join the conversation, 888-914-9149. Let's go to Kentucky. John will bring Todd into the conversation. He's listening to us in Lexington. Todd, hi. You're on the air with John Cribb. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm kind of curious your opinion about the movie Lincoln with Daniel Day-Lewis. I personally thought it was an excellent movie, but your take on the authenticity, as far as historic accuracy, I guess is a better way to put it.
Yeah, I loved it too. I mean, of course, I think I would have liked it no matter what. I'm such a Lincoln geek and was thrilled that Steven Spielberg and Daniel Day-Lewis took that up. And I thought Lewis did a fantastic job of portraying Lincoln. I thought they did a good job overall with historical accuracy. There were some things that were not quite right. For example, I can't remember the name of the actor, but the fellow that portrayed the Secretary of State, William Henry Seward, who referred to a minute ago, is actually the guy that wrote the Thanksgiving Day Proclamation. You know, in the movie, he's a fairly dour character, kind of always almost scolding Lincoln, you know. In real life, it was just the opposite. He was the one probably in the whole, out of the whole cabinet that enjoyed Lincoln's sense of humor the most, and, you know, he loved a good joke, and sometimes he would stay behind after the cabinet meeting to swap stories and jokes with Lincoln. And so there were some things like that, but, you know, I understand that having written a novel about Lincoln, I understand that as accurate as you want to be, there are just some parameters that you know that you have to stick to, if nothing else, just to keep the thing to under 500 right. pages or 400 pages, or make the movie only, you know, an hour and a half right. long. You have to leave a lot out. You just have to condense some stuff. But I am with you. I loved it. I haven't seen it in a while. I need to watch it again because I thought it was great, and I wish we had more movies like that coming out.
Amen to that. Hey, Todd, thanks. It's good to hear from you.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for calling in on that. I'm with you. You know, I wrote a book recently, and the first one I actually published, and it's hard trying to keep it to a page count. I'm sure you, as a Lincoln expert, yeah. You know, there had to be a battle. It was a battle for me. I know that much. So much I could have put in that hit the cutting room floor, as they say. Tell me about your book. Let's talk about Old Abe for a second. If anyone wants a good read over the holidays, I know they can get that. Where can you get it? And maybe fill everyone in on what they're going to experience.
Yeah, okay. Wherever books are sold, as I say, you know, Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com. Mm-hmm. I always encourage people to support their local independent bookstores if they can, and they can get it for you if they don't have it. And I should say the paperback version is published by Republic Books, and the paperback is coming out on Monday. The hardback's been out since last September. And it is a historical novel, and it tells the story of the last 5 years of Lincoln's life. So it starts with his nomination for the presidency, and then you're at his side every page as he goes through the Civil War and his presidency. And so you're with him for big events like the Gettysburg Address and the signing of the Emancipation Proclamation, and then lesser known events like Thanksgiving, you know, that first Thanksgiving, or the day his son Willie died in the White House, or the night the White House stables catch on fire and he tries to burst into this blazing inferno because he realizes his son's ponies and pet goats are in there and wants to get him out. So lots of moments like that, but I hope bring him alive. And that was one of my main goals, was to try to really bring him alive and make him a walking, talking, breathing person, and not just that stiff image, you know, we see on the penny or the $5 bill. But I also hope if people read it, I really tried to keep it as accurate as I could. And there's a date on the top of each chapter. And it, you know, and so I hope if people read it, they remember what, you know, just an extraordinary service he performed for this country. He really was that giant hero in that epic struggle to save the country and save our founding principles when we were very close to losing them.
It's so true. You know, today, if you're just joining me, we're talking with John Cribb. It's the 158th anniversary of President Abraham Lincoln's historic Gettysburg Address. And just taking a look at him, we're on the eve of Thanksgiving. It should be here, in less than a week now, and we'll all be celebrating this great nation. There's so much to talk about this great man. One of the things, John, we only have about a minute left to talk or so, but he was also a man that called our nation not only to pray for God's help, but also to ask for forgiveness for the sins of this nation. And I think we were fortunate at the time of the Civil War to have a leader like Abraham Lincoln. And I pray that future leaders in this country can be cut from the same cloth. But your final thoughts here in the last minute that I have for you.
Yeah, just real quickly, you know, he did become a man of great faith during the war. He saw God taking a direct hand in the war. And another great address is that second inaugural address. If you'll read it, it is an amazingly spiritual address. And he says this war was caused because of the sin of slavery, and God is judging the country. And then at the end, he asks that we treat each other with Christian love. You know, he says, with malice toward none, with charity for all, meaning charity, meaning Christian love. He became a man of deep faith. And I think that's a nice thing to remember as we go into Thanksgiving.
Yeah, and so appropriate for our own day and for our own age. I often think of the sins of our nation today that call down God's justice. I think we should pray and turn and ask for his mercy as well. John, thank you. I hope maybe we can connect again. The book is called Old Abe. You can check out John Cribb. That's C-R-I-B-B. It's johncribbauthor.com. Stay with me. I'll be back with more right after this. We'll pray the chaplain. Don't go away.